Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. It's time to reload this week's news, which, I mean, is almost must listen to radio in the sense that there's just so much. The first 2 weeks of the Trump administration, and this has made this segment gold. I mean, there's so much to talk about. It's pretty amazing. And I've got great people in studio to talk with tonight. We reload the week's news. We'll do biggest story. We'll do winners, losers, overreported, underreported. What story really kind of sucked you down the rabbit hole? And, of course, which story will we remember from this week in 5, 10, 50, 500 years from now? When there's no planet left and all that's left is the etchings on the cave wall. What will they remember from this week? In studio with me, Jen Sabella. She's a deputy editor at DNA Info, and she's also the co-host of Girl Talk, a talk show on stage at the Hideout. The next one is February 28th. Jen, good to see you. It's been a while.
Good to see you. I know. It's been a hot minute.
Gerard McClendon, a regular here in the Download, although speaking of hot minutes, it's been a couple months since I've seen you, Gerard. Gerard, of course, the host of Counterpoint on Lakeshore PBS and also a professor at Chicago State University. Gerard, great to see you, buddy.
It's good to be here.
I know, man. We need to do this much more often.
Yes, sir.
Last time I saw you might have been an election night or a primary of some sort. So
yeah.
Anyway. All right, so let's start. We always start with the biggest story of the week. Jen, what do you have for biggest story of the week?
I think it has to be the travel ban.
Yeah.
I know on Saturday it kind of started.
It really feels like it was 2 months ago.
I know. It's like every news day, it just feels like it's endless. Like, it's really bizarre, especially if you're in the news and you're just constantly like on social media and watching the stories roll in. It's a little overwhelming.
Yeah, it really is.
I've been trying to hit the treadmill.
It's hard to believe that story really, I mean, because it was Friday night that the executive order was signed, because we talked about it last week. But the actual protests, the airport protests and the fallout happened over the weekend and spilled into Monday and Tuesday. This really has, for all the stories that have been generated from the executive orders from President Trump, this one takes the cake.
Yes. And like, I think that the stories locally started pouring in when you hear people, you know, I'm stranded. I'm like trying to get home from vacation and I have a green card. And why am I not being let in? And I know in the airport in Dulles, people were being asked like what their religion was. And I mean, that sounds like an issue of people being confused on how to implement it. And and that's kind of what I think rolled out until that executive or the judge made the ruling on, what was that, Sunday?
Yeah.
But a lot of confusion. And then we had some stories locally about the doctor from Christ Hospital who was kind of stuck in the United Arab Emirates. And he's Syrian born, but was doing his residency here, has patients here. So we started hearing these local stories of people like actually affected by it. And I think that that's when everyone was like, wait a second, what is happening here?
And you know, Jen, think about that, Justin. Yeah, I mean, you're a medical doctor. You're out of the country. You're an IT expert out of the country trying to get back to the United States. You do research. You know, you're a research fellow at a major university. You're trying to get back to the, you know, I think about some of the doctors that worked on me when I had a pretty serious illness about 15 years ago. And all of these doctors are people who don't have what you would consider as stereotypical American names. All right. You know, one of my doctors, Dr. Safadi, Dr. Sakta Suwan. He's the one who did surgery on me. Dr. Augustine Iza from Africa. Dr. Shabra. I mean, so just imagine if those gentlemen couldn't get to their patients because of this ban.
I think we've heard all. I mean, this is one of the stories that, I mean, it has been talked about ad nauseum and in a good way, in the way that, you know, they really have really given it to the Trump administration from all over the globe for implementation and just sort of this idea that, you know, have you created this really sort of whole concept for something that's way more complicated than needed to be, meaning that, you know, there's what the United States does right now with immigration. Some experts say needs to be reformed. Some will say there's still it's a very rigorous, extensive process. If you're coming into this country, did it need to be changed in that way? Or was this just political?
I mean, I it was clearly a mess how it was rolled out. I think even if you support the ban on certain countries coming in for a period of time. I've heard, you know, this sounds like it was a little messy how they rolled it on a Friday night and then over the weekend when there's nobody at the Department of Homeland Security to deal with all of these people who are stuck at airports. I mean, I get grumpy when my flight is delayed an hour from like LA. So I can't imagine being in a different country and trying to get home, because America is home to a lot of the people who are stranded, and just having no recourse. So I think that implementation definitely seemed to be an issue. And another thing that I think this has highlighted that is a broader issue is the sort of brain drain that seems to be happening. Like 27%, I was reading today, of doctors in America are from other countries. And like a lot of them are from like Africa, Middle East, and Asia. So that speaks to something else. I mean, why do we have a lack of doctors in this country?
Yeah, maybe that'll bring to light a good question. Right?
That's a great topic. It really is. You know, what's interesting, I'm going to piggyback on that. It's interesting how the ban wasn't in effect on countries that you can call the dramatic irony or a coincidence, but countries where Trump has buildings or businesses, there were no bans.
There seemed to be a lot of consternation over the word ban. And it seemed that there's a goofy, this is where our news coverage has gone. The idea of, is it a ban? Is it not a ban? Then they're talking about it at the White House. They're talking about it on Twitter. But also the other part, I mean, which, you know, we talked about the implementation, but I mean, just overall, why the seven countries? Was this actually from the Obama administration? There was finger pointing across the aisle to try and, I mean, it just seems like, and Chris Roebling was on the show on Monday, and he made a great point that a lot of people who voted for Donald Trump voted to drain the swamp and for something else to be done, but they also voted in his competence, meaning he's a confident businessman and he gets things done. If his first steps out of the gate are stumbles and incompetence and you know, having trouble implementing different plans, that's not what the people voted for.
I also don't think that they're hearing what actually happened.
Yes.
So there's like, I was reading just being on social media all day is enough to make you want to blow your brains out. But there were people saying only 100 people were impacted by this, when clearly there were thousands and thousands of people affected. I mean, there have been, we had a story, DNA Info had a story earlier this week about the lineup of lawyers at O'Hare. And they are just basically fielding calls from family members, talking to people who are waiting for family members getting in, trying to just, they're just showing up at the airport. People are like, what do I do? Is my mom going to be able to get back in the country? You know, I need to go and visit a dying family member. Am I going to be able to go? Should I leave? Lawyers are mostly just saying like, don't leave. You absolutely don't have to. I think it's created a,
and you know, extreme vetting, that kept coming up, that term extreme vetting, and they said it wasn't a ban, and then they found the Rudy Giuliani tapes that basically discussed the Trump Giuliani conversation where, you know, I need, you know, it's a ban, but I need you to word it in a way where it sounds legal.
Right.
Absolutely.
And not to mention, there's so much to talk about, but he fired the attorney general.
AG, you're out of here. He thought it was The Apprentice.
I think she knew that would happen.
Yeah.
I think that she didn't. She kind of went out with a bang, and that was her.
It feels like this story was 6 months ago.
Exactly.
I mean,
it feels
just
really
the
old.
Idea that whole thing with the attorney general happened on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Maybe Monday night. Right here. Jen Sabella, Gerard McClendon in studio. We're breaking down this week's news. Coming up, we'll do winners and losers and overreported and underreported. Here on 720 WGN. If you want to get involved, 312-981-7200. Stay with us. All right, Jen Sabella, Gerard McClendon in studio. We're reloading this week's news. We just got through the big story. I would say, maybe, you know, I'm trying to figure out what category to put this in, but a runner-up to the biggest news story of the week for me was the Black History Month breakfast in which Donald Trump had a conversation with a Cleveland pastor who said he had spoken to Chicago gang quote thugs, which was also a strange way to put it. He meant leaders, and they wanted to have a truce because they respected Donald Trump. They respected the administration. They didn't respect the past administration. And, you know, for everyone, and Donald Trump on cue, this is terrible. What's happening in Chicago? Something's got to be done. Well, let's make that happen. I'm open to it. But at the end of the day, as the day went on and Chicago media started asking more questions, it became, well, I didn't really speak to Chicago gang member. I spoke to former gang. I was tired. Mm-hmm. and the story kind of broke down. I mean, but what I took from that story, which is a big one, is, you know, these are national storylines. These are headlines. These are things that are becoming, you know, the sort of how Chicago is known nationally. There are no gang leaders to talk to about a truce that want to talk to Trump. That's what we've learned about Chicago. There's a different day than 1985 when it comes to gang violence. Right, Gerard?
Most definitely. And I'm not going to call Daryl Scott, Pastor Daryl Scott, so-called. I'm not going to call him the L word. I'm just going to call him an elaborate prevaricator, all right? I won't call him a liar. Elaborate. You know, the optics were amazing because in that meeting, if you look closely, sitting to the left of Pastor Daryl Scott is the African-American columnist slash radio serious host Armstrong Williams, mm-hmm. Far right black conservative. Armstrong Williams is laughing at Daryl Scott. You can see him cover his mouth.
It became like a meme,
it's
right?
Because he knew that he was lying. He knew it. And the fact that Daryl Scott had to keep backtracking on the story, Washington Post called him, New York Times
called him, Chicago called him, all his papers called him.
Absolutely, CNN. And he's dialing back the story. And what's interesting is if Daryl Scott came to Chicago and you asked him to go to 79th and Ashland, if you asked him to go to 83rd, you know, and Indiana, he wouldn't know where to go. That's what's troubling about the story. You know, and a sidebar, when President Trump was at the prayer breakfast, President Trump's bragging about himself at the prayer. The prayer breakfast is supposed to be a solemn event. You know, it was just really frustrating looking at how the seriousness of the presidency of the United States has taken a back seat this week.
Yeah.
Frustrating.
Well, I mean, the Chicago story, we've seen it over and over in this in the campaign. Trump talks about Chicago in the debate. He then tweets out and it's just been that Chicago has a violence problem. It is what's happening in that city is terrible. And so on and so forth from the president. This sort of fed right into that. And no one really reports on the fact that it was all sort of lies, that there really isn't any truce. There isn't any respect for the Trump administration. That was just made up for a television thing.
We actually have a running list of stories that we run whenever Donald Trump tweets about Chicago. That is kind of a fact check on Chicago having the toughest gun laws in the country, which is not true. And on Chicago being the murder capital of the country, which is also not true. If you have a list of, I think last story we did on this, we crunched, it was the 25 cities that had the highest murder rates per capita. And most of those cities were in states that overwhelmingly voted for Donald Trump. So, I mean, I think that Chicago's a scapegoat, A, because of its history, you know, Al Capone, the whole mobster mm-hmm. thing, and then you have
a Democratic
city that is like, you know, we shut down
where
his rally.
Where the alderman, and where the alderman took down his honorary street sign,
exactly.
And where the mayor is every other day talking about Donald Trump in some sort of negative way. This is known to the country as a Democratic stronghold. It's where the former president that just left, that everybody, every Republican was after, is from. So, I mean, there is something to be said that is it a far stretch to say that the issue of gun violence and what's happening here in Chicago being politicized in Washington?
Yes, it is, because it's an easy thing to just point at Chicago. You know, Chicago, over 700 murders. That place is horrible. And politicians love to rally around some sort of cause, even if they don't have one. They're going to rally around a cause and they're going to blame the other political party for not doing something about it. And if they haven't done something about that particular issue, they're going to mm-hmm. try to own it and throw out comments that may not have any weight to them, but it gets a headline, you know, and we're going to see 2 years from now, we're going to see when the elections come back into play, we're going to see 2 years from now who's for real and who's fake. It's going to be glaringly obvious.
Well, I mean, I hope, but I mean, it's a divisive and divided country in the way that, you know, people are not necessarily on the fence on which way they're going to vote. If they were going to vote tomorrow, they would vote the same way. I just wonder, you know, when, I mean, CNN today said that the ATF is bringing 20 different agents in to Chicago tonight, or that's been this week, something that they said has been planned way before the Trump administration even began. And then there's been all this talk about the feds. What's it going to take to show any sort of, I guess the question would be, improvement in this story? Is it just, I mean, are you going to see Donald Trump? Last week, Charlie Meyerson had a great point. He said, now it's Donald Trump's story. Meaning, you know, this is something that he has brought on, so he needs to show improvement in the city of Chicago.
He said
he'd fix it, so let's see you fix it. I mean, are we going to see Donald Trump roll up his sleeves and try to fix this?
So Donald Trump takes advantage of every story that seems to work in, you know, to his advantage. So even though ATF is something that's been probably planned for months, if not years, because Donald Trump's the president now, he's going to claim it. And we saw this occur also with the unemployment rate. You know, just a few months ago, he was talking about how beautiful it was. Then he switched to horrible. And then today he came out with something totally different. So just like any politicians that's trying to take advantage of a situation, he's going to do that. This is why we have to have a strong, it's more, we have to have great investigative reporting. We have to have journalists that are constantly on the beat to refute as well as to present facts that aren't alternative. We have to make sure that the journalism community keeps everybody on point, or else this thing could just turn into chaos.
Gerard McClendon, Jen Sabella in studio. We're reloading this week's news. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll do winners and losers. There's a lot. I mean, we were sort of with our list. This is becoming a little bit of a listicle in the way that there's a lot of winners and a lot of losers this week. We're reloading this week's news. 312-981-7200 if you want to get involved. We'll take your calls and your texts as well here in the segment. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Jen Sabella, the deputy editor at DNA Info. Also the host of one of the hosts of Girl Talk, which is a talk show at the Hideout, which is every last Thursday,
Fourth Tuesday of the month. This month it'll be February 28th.
How do you like doing it?
It's so fun. It's really been an amazing community and just talking to really cool women who we never would know otherwise. And in the last few months, I think after the election, our attendance has gone way up. And I think people are, the one great thing about this really contentious election is people want to be together again, like, and talk to you people in like supportive spaces. And I think that it's really benefited our show.
The next one is February 28th at the Hideout up at 1354 West Wabanzia.
And we will have a refugee on the show and we'll have a immigration attorney, and they'll be talking about how this has impacted Chicago women specifically.
Gerard McClendon, also in studio, professor at Chicago State University and also the host of Counterpoint on Lakeshore PBS, and somewhat of a regular. We haven't seen you in a while.
It's good to be here. I mean, you know, it's nothing like being on a Michigan Avenue at Trip Tower.
I know, so nice. I wish it was summertime. Yeah. Some texts coming in. 815, the fact that you are trying to make an argument that Chicago isn't the shooting gallery, that it's reported every day in the local papers, undermines all of the other arguments and your credibility. I've lived in Chicago for 50 years, and the amount of gun violence is off the charts. I know you slip into the word per capita when you say it's not the murder capital. Nice, sleazy media trick.
No,
I like to keep things sleazy.
Yeah, you know, that's it. You know, here's the thing.
My nickname.
Most of the shootings and killings
sleazy
are taken.
Sleazy Sabella.
Sleazy Sabella. Oh, man. The no sleaze zone. You know, most of those shootings are taking place in a Bermuda Triangle. I mean, we're talking, you know, certain parts of Austin, certain parts of Englewood, you know. If anything, we've got to focus on those pockets. We've got to focus on the economics, the schooling in those zones, you know, and just the overall morale in those zones. But per capita is still important.
I would say that for us, I mean, for us to have the conversation about shooting and how it's being portrayed or violence being portrayed by the Trump administration has nothing to do with the fact that, I mean, this person says they lived in Chicago for 50 years, got an 815 area code. But I also would say that so has Gerard and so has myself. I mean, we we understand. I would say, you go back to some of the years, and you know, like I was looking at the numbers. 1998 Ooh. Had 800, 900 shootings. There's nobody in this room, nobody that suggests that Chicago is being misrepresented when it comes to violence to Chicagoans. Mm-hmm. But when it's talked about and it's politicized and it's done in a way where the Cleveland pastor is saying that he talked to gang members and he's going to do a truce, I think the scary part about that story to me is that I know from covering the news that it's not accurate and that you're just making up a story to make it seem like you're tough on crime. When you say you're going to have a truce with gang members or gang leaders, there's no such thing anymore. 815, let me tell you, that's the truth. I mean, they're teenagers.
If you talk to police, they'll say the same thing. Yeah. You can't fight this with more police. Like, they only can do so much. They can't battle the fact that WBZ did a great report the other day on the schools and how these kids don't have food and they don't have, you know, there's a poverty that is just horrific. And there's just a lot of deeper issues here. And you can't just come in with a National Guard and a bunch of guns and a bunch of police, and it's not going to fix it. And I think it's actually really unfair to put that on the police.
I agree. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, I think everybody on this program who's talking has a sensitivity to the to violence. Yeah. And the idea that we are somehow sweeping under the rug is bogus. Let me ask you, though, I mean, as we're kind of doing winners and losers next, I had on my list a loser being Governor Rauner in the state of Illinois. Mostly because this week we saw the Attorney General, Lisa Madigan, last week say that, you know, they're going to overturn a ruling that says that they can pay state workers, really essentially putting the government on deadline. Governor Rauner in the last couple of days has just gone on a tour to say, you know, bad Democrats and tears. This is the same old, instead of taking heed and saying, OK, I've got 28 days to do a budget. And instead, we're, you know, there was even one point where he said that, you know, the comptroller has the right to fight back and delay this in court. And I feel like that message is a loser message in the way that we're going to trade through his politics as long as we can to avoid having to actually balance a budget. And we were just talking in the break. Is there a correlation between what we see in Chicago when it comes to violence and numbers shooting up in 2016 and a lot of community members and researchers and police scratch their head? Why is 2015 have this number and then it jumps up 300, 400 for 2016? The only thing that has been, you know, consistent is the fact that there has been a lack of an Illinois state budget. Do you agree that there might be some correlation to the fact that social services and other things that are involved with the state budget could be contributing to an increase in Chicago violence?
I think that makes sense. I actually am kind of horrified that I hadn't thought of that before. But there also, I would like to point out that there were a bunch of mental health clinics closed under Rahm Emanuel also. But then there are further cuts to, you know, domestic violence shelters and mental health clinics and drug rehabilitation clinics. And these places are operating on a paper, on a super thin budget as it is. So any cuts are substantial. Think that's an interesting.
What do you think,
Jerome? Yeah, I agree with you. And when you look at young black male unemployment, it's through the roof, along with black male dropout rates. You know, we're over 50% now. And so what's a 14, 15, 16-year-old African-American boy doing on the street during the school day, not in school, unemployed? What's going to happen? It's a powder keg. And that issue really hasn't been addressed yet.
And it could be addressed through funding through the federal. We talked about that. We need federal funding. That's what Rahm Emanuel throws at Donald Trump, saying, you know what? Hey, give us funding for youth programs.
Absolutely. And when Rauner and Madigan continue to fight, when they can't decide where to eat in Springfield together, that's problematic to me. When you can't come up with any solution, let alone go nearly 2 years without a budget, it's frustrating. Social services and, you know, let's look even halfway houses, you know, so you're out of prison or you're out of jail and you're at a halfway house, you're released in 6 months, you're still unemployed. What do you do? Something else is problematic. Okay, so I'm at Chicago State University. Schools and universities are suffering as well. You know, a portion of my salary is paid for by people's taxes. Mm-hmm. And if the monies aren't disseminated to and allocated to Chicago State, we, out of 1,000 employees, we lost 400 employees at Chicago State in the last 18 months. you know, and it's budget impasse. So, yes, we've been getting stopgap monies, which is great, you know, for those that still work there. But, you know, every time I see Madigan and Rauner on TV, the hair on the back of my neck rises.
I think it's led to a general disgust. I think that on both sides of the aisle, whether you vote consistently Republican or Democrat, I think in Illinois, everyone is disgusted.
Yeah, well,
and there's a lot of work to be done.
Okay, let's go to, I want to go to Walt. Walt's got a point wants to make about gang truces. Walt, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So what do you say about the idea of what's been happening, and when you talk about gang truces, you have an anecdotal story about it?
I do. I have an interesting historical aspect to this. I went to medical school at University of Illinois, and about 1990 or 91, I did trauma rotation at Cook County Hospital. And part of our education before we started the rotation was learning about gangs, the two major nations, the people and the folk, and learning some of the gangs within them, their different colors, their different signs, so that when we had gang members come in, we were able to recognize some of the nuances of how that might play out. But one of the interesting things is we probably had about 75 or 80% penetrating trauma every night, so knife wounds and gunshot wounds, and the rest was blunt trauma, motor vehicle crashes and falls or jumps. When we would get word that the two nations had truce, our penetrating trauma would go practically to zero overnight. And it was mostly the falls and the jumps and the motor vehicle crashes. And then all of a sudden somebody would break the truce. Somebody would shoot somebody. Right. And it would jump back up to, you know, 20 traumas a night, mostly penetrating.
Yeah.
And so it was interesting. We have to think of them as a nation rather than just gangs. And I do want to give a quote of the great head of Cook County Trauma, John Barrett. He was a large Irishman. And he used to say, the problem with these gang members is that they don't know how to shoot. And they're shooting the innocent bystanders. If we could take them out and teach them to hit their target, we'd have less trauma.
Wow.
Thanks, Walt. Thanks for that. But I would say to Walt, I mean, and this has been well documented, and this is sort of why I wanted to take the call, was that, you know, he talked about his life in Cook County Trauma Unit in 1990. And Gerard, you know this as well. I mean, this is 1990 to 2017 is a different story in Chicago. There was a great piece that was done by Harper High by Linda Lutton, a great journalist mm-hmm. in Chicago. This concept of gangs and how gangs have changed. There isn't a nation anymore. Now you have 15-year-old kids who go block by block by block. This is what police have been talking about in the last 4 or 5 years. They're saying that it's gone to a point where now your gang is where you live, the block you live on, and you fight the block on next to it. And there is no gangster disciple leadership mm-hmm. that comes in and says, "All right, guys, time to stop." Like that's long gone.
No organization. And we're living in the realm of the revenge killing now too. So, you know, I killed your cousin a few years ago over a bag of marijuana, or you didn't give me my payment on time. And then, the funeral happens, and then a few years pass, and then 3 years later, somebody in that family from the revenge gets popped. Mm-hmm. And those things are hard to detect. That's not something that you can categorize or calculate or even quantify, because you don't know when that's going to happen. And so...
And that's the whole idea of the interrupters. Ceasefire, yeah.
Exactly. Ceasefire, ceasefire loses funding.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's like actual, like, I feel like everyone just needs to pay attention to what works, because there's documentation. Like there's studies, and there are people who actually have researched this, and they're like, well, we had ceasefire interrupters on the ground trying to break up conflicts before they
turned into a head.
And it worked. I mean, it worked, and they have numbers of like the amount of shootings on a block with and without these people here to interrupt. And then we just cut off funding.
We didn't cut off. It's interesting, 'cause in the state of Illinois too, because I remember covering this. It was this was really Governor Quinn's downfall.
Yes. Exactly.
In the way that there was misappropriations of funds or there was corruption involved in violence prevention programs, and it got a bad name.
It did.
It got a bad name because that's where money goes to be stolen. And the idea became like throw all that out with the, you know, the baby out with the bathwater. And the state of Illinois has really pulled back on funding, and even in this case without a budget funding at all.
Right.
But it is. But I think the point being, we've had Teo Hardeman in here, we've had Philip Jackson in here, talking about how the kids of this generation, the kids that are at, I mean, really, you're talking about an age group from, like you said, 15 to 25. They're not beholden to a nation or a gang or any sort of affiliation. They have easy access to guns. You talked about revenge. There's no hope because there's lack of, they're not in school, things of that nature. And you are seeing something that has not been seen before.
Dr. Carl Bell, UIC psychiatrist, I interviewed him for my documentary. And it's interesting because Dr. Carl Bell, he just recently had two or three articles published in journals. And he talks about how in poor African-American neighborhoods, there's this ignored citizen. It's the young African-American female who is pregnant and is still drinking alcohol. And they don't find out that they're pregnant until it's too late. And then they may stop drinking the alcohol. But he talks about how in his papers, he talks about the correlation where there are African-American children who may be suffering from fetal alcohol poisoning. And so when they get in school, they've got attention deficit. They have they have impulse issues. And this is something that hasn't been studied.
He's been studying it for a couple of years now, but you don't hear it. But that's that again, that goes to societal ills. Mm-hmm. You know, sort of the byproducts of poverty and all the things that go with it. Gerard McClendon, Jen Sabella, we're breaking down this week's news, but also having a very interesting conversation about a story that is beyond just this week. We will continue the conversation. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do some of the winners. You know, we'll start talking about all the bad things. Let's talk about the winners from this week here on The Download. Stay with us. The Download here on 720 WGN. Gerard McClendon, Jen Sabella in studio. Oh, we're getting some great calls. There's calls on the line right now, and I want to get to everything. I also want to get to our categories, winners and losers. The losers, we kind of talked about the State House, the budget impasse, violence, of course. Steve Bannon is on the list. Ooh. Steve Bannon has become a lightning rod for criticism and controversy ever since he quietly was given national security clearance and more we're seeing, I mean, just his past, things he said in the past. He's talked about Islam in a way that is just like we just talked with Dr. Pape in the 7:30 hour about some of that rhetoric. Just that plays right into what ISIS and other terrorism organizations want us to, that they tell other people, this is what the Americans think of you. And the guy in the National Security Council is saying it.
He wants that. I mean, like, I spent a lot of time this week reading about Steve Bannon, to the destruction of my own mental health. But I was reading this piece about this book that he's really obsessed with, which is called Fourth Turnings. And it's all about war and how we are entering another period of change and of war. And it's going to be this basically like a World War III incident that's going to basically leave a lot of people dead. And then we're all going to kind of come together as a nation afterward. And the way I've been reading this is like he wanted this reaction from the left on this ban, this travel ban. And there was that other executive order floated this week, the anti-gay executive order, which apparently got shot down by with the help of Ivanka Trump.
Our new national hero, Ivanka Trump. Right.
Who knew? He thrives on like all people who've worked with him say he like loves a fight, and he wants like the liberals and the left to be pissed off.
Well, I mean that I hate to say it, but I mean that is sort of the ethos behind Breitbart, which is which is the site that he founded or is a part of, one of the big editors at that site. I mean, there is something about the idea of instigation. You know, sort of conflict in the way that you're always poking at the other side. I mean, left blogs do that, right blogs do. There's a all this sort of like trying to get a rise out of the other side. And it seems like this has become policy at the White House.
Yeah, and the provocation and the optics of the provocation were interesting this week, too, because of course, Bannon's connection with Breitbart. And then you look at Milo Yiannopoulos at Berkeley.
Terrible story.
You know, one of the most horrifying photographs I've seen is the photograph of President Trump in the Oval Office. There's a stack of newspapers on his desk. You know he didn't read them. But you see Bannon next to him, looking at him sideways, feeding him information. And it's like, wow.
Well, I mean,
it's diabolical, man.
It is something that, I mean, I guess now you're seeing John Cass had a big article that just came out in the Tribune about the hard left. Mm-hmm. You know, I have them sort of in a loser category in this way that we're seeing more protests that will happen at the airport or happen peacefully. The Women's March is a great example of it. But then you'll see what happens at Berkeley where, you know, a different sort of, I don't want to say sect, but different protest agenda comes out. And then I forgot the name that I read this whole article today. It kind of was one of my rabbit hole stories about the was it Altifa or I forgot what it was called, but a group of almost anti-fascist. They were in New York yesterday. They were in Berkeley. They were the ones that were, you know, sort of they're the ones that took responsible for punching the Nazi in the viral video. Yeah. Yeah. But you're getting this sort of they're becoming almost the face of protest. So you'll see a mainstream America go, you know what? That's terrible. Do you know these liberals that are out on the street punching people? And that's not necessarily the truth or the case. Just as if people who voted, not everybody who voted for Trump is in the KKK, you know?
Right, but that you don't hear the kind of condemnation you hear about somebody breaking a window to the guy who's spouting like kill the Jews at a Trump rally. So that's the thing that I think that the hypocrisy is what riles people.
Yeah.
And it's you know, okay, it's a broken window and that's unfortunate, but it's also unfortunate that there are refugees who've been in a camp in Somalia for 9 years and who had their green cards and who are about to come over, a mother with her three kids, and now has nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. So that's also
hypocrisy.
If a broken window bothers you more than that, then maybe let's all take a look. Like,
there is something and when you have an outspoken White House, and Steve Bannon is a part of that, the hypocrisy is a little bit easier to find. You know, we saw today even the tweet, which is a well thought, or the tweet about France, what happened at the Louvre in the mall underneath, a single, you know, I guess a terrorist attack, that a man with two machetes who, you know, the police, he hurt a police officer, but was, I think he was shot. I'm not sure if he was killed. But the point being that Donald Trump went to Twitter.
Snarky, yes.
Snarky, and he said, this is what we need to stand up and we need to pay attention, people. And you're like, well, what happened in Quebec?
Yes, the mosque.
With a mosque on the day of your travel ban, and a white supremacist went into a mosque and killed 8 people. Where's the tweet on that?
You know, exactly. It's scary being a professor sometimes because we have to make sure that we present things that are empirical. And if we cannot, we should not present it, or we'll be checked by other professors who will say, hey, man, you need to check your sources, or you need to be more realistic with your study. There's something in program evaluation that I teach. We teach type 1 and type 2 errors. And anytime you have a false narrative, you have to check first the question, then you look at the answers, and then you gauge the answers against the question. But one thing that the Trump administration does is it thrives on type 1 and type 2 errors. When it knows it's wrong, it will change the subject. Trump is so good at that. Bannon, they're very good at it. So the minute they know that, the minute Kellyanne's in trouble, or the minute Bannon's in trouble, let's flip the script and change the subject. We saw the subject change 6-7 times just this week.
We haven't got to winners, and I was going to just start like a pithy sort of like, the winner's Beyonce, you know, for her. Yeah. But I think there's I want to take a break and get to that, because I think they're that's a good subject to talk about. This strange and positive sort of adoration around Beyonce getting pregnant. You know, I almost, like, part of me, and I don't know if it's just, you know, the fact that maybe I'm not in her wheelhouse. I was like, I'll just make a quick, hey, you know, the winner, Beyonce, we're done. But there's more to it. I mean, it's an interesting story this week that may be a nice transition to get out of talking about Donald Trump. What do you think?
Please.
Does that sound good?
Yeah. I think that's why she's the winner.
Yeah. All right, 312-981-7200. I know there's some people on the line. We got to take a break and get to the news. After the news, we'll take your calls. Again, 312-981-7200. We come back, a little bit of Beyonce. We'll also talk about overreported, underreported, and which story will we remember in 500 years. Sound good? Mm-hmm. All right, 720 WGN. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, Gerard McClendon, professor at Chicago State University, also the host of Counterpoint on Lakeshore PBS, and Jen Sabella, deputy editor at DNA Info, and also the co-host of Girl Talk, a talk show at a bar at the Hideout, 1354 West Wabanzia, the fourth Tuesday of every month, February 28th.
Yes, 6:30 p.m.
All right, so overreported, underreported, overreported. You know, and I still want to talk about Beyonce too, but and there's a little bit of overreported in Beyonce as well. I mean, because everyone loves Beyonce, I can understand. But after a while, I was like, all right, I she's just pregnant.
Yeah, I think everyone just needed a break.
Is that?
And this was like the break everyone needed. It was just like executive order news and like all like really intense and hard to read stuff and like really hard to process and a lot of fighting. And then it's like Beyonce wearing a veil, looking amazing.
Yeah.
Pregnant with twins, bringing two more humans into this world. And it's just beautiful.
It was my moment, Jen and Justin, to be a part of the beehive. And I felt a little shallow at first when I found out, and I kind of showed, you know, the alert to a few people, and I felt like this, you know, 13-year-old, you know, but then I had to dial it back. I said, you know what, maybe this can be considered shallow, but at the same time, this is one of the biggest artists in the world. Mm-hmm. She's about to have twins. Twins with whom? Twins with Jay-Z. You know, it's a beautiful thing. You just have to, you know, you just have to say, hey, in a world of turmoil, you know, I'm going to look at Queen B with this little outfit on, and it's maternity time.
Yeah.
It's all good.
It's all good. All right, good. I've been convinced. It's out of the sold. Overreported column. All right, so in the other overreported, we had on the list a celebrity apprentice. You know, we saw Donald Trump continue, whether it be on social media or at the National Prayer Breakfast, talk about how Arnold Schwarzenegger is not a good host of Celebrity Apprentice and this, that, and the other. And we just eat it up. Like, the media just goes crazy about reporting about what he said, half because we're just completely mortified that he's using that time to talk about this, but also because we kind of like it. And we like this weird thing that Trump likes to do where he talks about pop culture. I don't know. I feel like it's way overrated, overreported. Who cares?
I mean, I get the reason why people reported it, but yeah, it's also just one of those things where it's like we spend so much time on it while other stuff gets overlooked that's like really significant, whether that be you know, the fact that now severely mentally ill people will be able to easily get their guns again. But, you know, that was like barely, you know, a blip. And then you have the tweet war between Arnold and Donald. And it's
too much.
It's shallow. But I kind of get why people want to be shallow sometimes.
You know, if they were just 20 years younger, it would seem shallow. And if they were 50 years younger, we still probably would frown upon it, but these are grown men. Really? These are grown. these are beyond middle-aged men doing this. And so it made me look, as a PBS talk show host, I was thinking about this. I was like, okay, when you work on PBS or NPR, you have to use fewer adjectives. You have to deliver facts. All right. If you're an editorialist or columnist or talk show host, you get a little bit more liberty. Yeah. Okay, to use adverbs, adjectives.
Oh, I use so many adjectives; it's crazy.
Absolutely. And you don't. And there we go. And you still, but you still have to. You still have to tell the truth,
yeah.
All right? But the sensationalism seems to be the flavor of the day. You know, God is the advertising dollar, and it has come in the form of attention. If I'm not getting attention, I'm not relevant. But news media can't always resort to that. Maybe some forms are defaulting to popularity.
Of course they are. I mean, that's the idea. I mean, now we have ways to monitor or to monetize by how many clicks that you get on a story. I mean, this is a story that's happened to media for years. Where I have, and I think this is kind of like an underreported story, is that I do share some sentiment that I've heard from Trump followers, this idea of fake news. I do start to see much, much more sloppy news reporting under the Trump administration. And a good point, case in point, this week, it was reported that both judges were going to D.C. and it was going to be more like a reality show when he comes out and he introduces the Supreme Court nominee. That never happened. I read a day later that Hardiman never came to D.C. And then CNN walked it back saying, well, we had it, a White House source told us. And then the Australian prime minister call, we got that story right in our face, said, oh, it was terrible. Oh, my God, what did he do to our ally? And then the next day, the Australian prime minister says, no, it was fine. And then the same with the Mexican president, when they talked to the foreign minister came out and said the same thing, like, no troops were. Mm-hmm. I just feel like there's some sourcing issues in the White House. The media is using that sourcing, and I don't know if those sources are trying to embarrass the president or what it is, but I just feel like it is say it, and then 2 days later, apologize for it.
Yeah, it's like first is best.
Yeah, and it's terrible for everybody.
I don't need a second or third source. Everyone suffers when that occurs, when you have reporting that's taking place that kind of dumbs down the intellect or assumes that the public isn't intellectual enough to handle it. So just give it to me first, whether it's true or not. That's rough.
And I also think that it shows you who you should be trusting. I know that you're less likely to see sloppy errors like that in like the New York Times, in more newspaper setting. I think that TV has this like rush, like we have to get everything up right now, and we're all racing for ratings. And I think newspaper standards have, I'm not saying every newspaper and I'm not saying every news website, but they tend to adhere to a certain set of principles. Like, we're not going to publish a DNA info. We do not publish a story that is based on an anonymous source. Like, we don't do it. We will include someone if we trust the source enough and we have more to support.
But these
story.
Probably aren't anonymous sources. The problem is that they're protected sources, meaning CNN, Fox, MSNBC, even the newspapers have developed these sources in the White House. They're probably, just not for, being named in some form. And I don't know what it is, but they just keep making mistakes. Mm-hmm. And those mistakes for I want to, I cherish the media and the idea that we tell the stories. And I enjoy seeing sort of calling truth to power or the checks and balances of the media and administrations and people in power. But way too many mistakes happening in the way that you're just scratching your head. And I guess the juxtaposition is that when you actually have Donald Trump saying things, he says things about Arnold Schwarzenegger. So you really don't get anything from him.
I think we all need to slow down. I think that's another issue. It's like everyone's tweeting and like posting on Facebook, and then that's how these like fake news stories get spread. I mean, no one bothers to Google it. I mean, right. I got into another like argument on Facebook today, even though I promised myself I would stop doing this. but it was just somebody who had a screenshot of a partial headline, and the rest of the headline contradicted what the person was saying. And I was just like, man, Google it. Like, it's really not that hard. Google it and check your sources. And does it look, does it look weird to you? Does it sound ridiculous to you? I think media literacy is needed now more than ever.
Oh, I love that. Media literacy, We need civics, and we need the melding of those two, because it's so easy with technology now to invent your own fake story. I mean, you can build your own masthead, or you can use someone else's masthead. You get a nice, you know, JPEG photo. You put a sexy headline under it. You put it on Facebook and Twitter, and it just starts getting retweeted.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and what's this is the sad part. If that fake news story hits a newsroom and the wrong reporter gets it and runs with something that's some sort of incarnation of it, now you're really in trouble.
Yeah. Gerard McClendon and Jen Sabella. Okay, so let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up. Let's talk about what story sucked you down the rabbit hole, and then also which story will we be talking about 10, 15, 20, 5,500 years from now. So download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. This is Download here on 720 WGN. We're reloading this week's news. 847 says, we must show the entire world that we can live together like cats and dogs in peace and total harmony. Hmm. That's a nice suggestion. Mm-hmm. And I know some people who have cats and dogs, and they get along just fine. Pete has cats and dogs. They get along fine.
Wow.
Gavin, reload this week's news. What do you want to say?
Hello. How are you going?
It's good.
Good. I'm calling from Australia. Pleasure. I appreciate you taking my call.
Oh, thank you. From Australia. What, are you just streaming the, what time is it there?
It's probably 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, nice. Well, then I'm better in the afternoon. So,
probably.
All right, Gavin, what do you want to say?
Sorry. It definitely is. Sorry. I'll be succinct. I think, I listen to a lot of radio here. And the main focus is on Donald Trump. And I just wanted to give you a little taste of what we look at, how we perceive what's going on in your country at the moment. So, you know, I have to preface this by saying that I was born in Australia, but I'm an Indian guy. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think the instinctive reaction when you're of color and you see someone like Donald Trump get elected, you instinctively sort of, revert back to saying, okay, no, this is not a guy I can stand for. But the problem lies in this, okay? The collective thought process now amongst my friends overseas and in Australia is, you know, they say, how did this happen? How is America so silly? How could they elect this fool? And the fact is, this is an anti-establishment movement happening across the world. You look at the Brexit vote. You look at the election of a Filipino president who is essentially a dictator. Okay, in Australia we have a lady by the name of Pauline Hanson. Have you heard of her before?
I have. Yeah, I don't know much about her.
Anyway. So anyway. So this is an anti-establishment movement, which is basically the vogue in politics now.
Right.
Worldwide. And my own perspective is that the U.S., I mean, you guys, you're middle and lower class. You've been looking for this hand grenade to toss to Washington, D.C. to break up this familial oligarchic political structure, right? And your people have been disenfranchised by the GFC. By the government caring more, by Obama caring for more for foreign interests than at home, from mass illegal immigration, from your people fear they're losing their First and Second Amendment rights, and they're not being listened to, and it's the same thing here. You got a Republican Party that has been pro free trade, that has destroyed manufacturing cities. I'm talking about Michigan, Philadelphia. You got the Democratic Party that's been funded by unions, but hasn't been pro-workers for the past 25 years, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks, so, Gavin. I'm going to wrap just because we only have 2 minutes left here, but thanks for that. He does make a great point, and it's a point that we've talked about here on WGN, but, you know, this, I do truly believe, and we have Touche, which is Dave and Chris on Mondays. You know, the idea right now is that people brought Donald Trump to Washington because they voted, you know, and you can make arguments about the popular vote for the electoral vote, but they voted for Donald Trump to break up what was happening the last 16 years in D.C., not just the Obama administration, but also the Bush administration, this idea that D.C. matters more than everybody else. The thing that will trip that up more than anything is incompetence, having trouble when you put an executive order out and it wasn't the right move and people you're not communicating. When you show that you are not ready for the job, that's where you start to see cracks in the foundation.
Also, people need to start paying attention locally. There is more than a presidential election. There are local councils you can get on. You can start paying attention to state politics. I mean, this is where you can actually make a difference at home. In your state, you have to pay attention. We have to get people more engaged and people registered to vote and to feel like their vote matters. And I think your vote will matter so much more in local.
It would be interesting to see if an anti-movement in D.C. at all can translate to an anti-establishment movement in cities and in counties. I mean, right now, the Democratic Party in Chicago has reign. For even you see in the state of Illinois has had rain for years. They are that sort of machine, if you will.
I think they're in trouble.
Yeah,
I don't think it's from people on the right. I think it's from people on the left. I think that it's going to be there's going to be a big progressive push in Chicago. And as Rahm Emanuel has had an easy maybe a couple of weeks since Trump, and he looks like a little bit of a hero to some Democrats. I think there is a group of young progressives, and they plan on ousting him, and they are not going to just suddenly back him because Donald Trump is president.
Be careful what you ask for, and to politicians, what have you done for me lately?
All right, last question tonight. We'll skip the rabbit hole. It's probably Trump-related, and we're done talking about Trump. All right, so let's talk about what story from this week will be remembered in a month. In 6 months, in a year, in 5 years, 10 years, 50 bonus points for 500. Let's start with you, Jen. What story do you think from this week is the one that will be remembered?
Well, you see, my non-Trump story was the rabbit hole one. But again, I think that this travel situation is interesting. And depending on how it plays out, it could really change the future of the country. I mean, we have historically been a nation of immigrants. We've let in refugees. I mean, not by the numbers that other countries have. But I think nationally or internationally could change the way America is viewed for a long time. So, I mean, that depends on how everything goes.
And I think the Budweiser commercial on the Super Bowl will sum that up, what Jen just said. It's going to sum it up.
That is true.
You know, you don't have great American companies without immigrants.
my story. What's your story, Gerard? What do you think is going to be remembered?
Oh, I'm in agreement with Jan. You know, I think the fact that you say that you're going to keep certain people out of the country for an allotted point in time, and this is the land of the free, home of the brave, give me your huddled masses. I think that story is going to be in history books. I really do, because when history books are written 30, 40 years from now, there was this Donald Trump, and in his first week in office, he formed some sort of ban on a religion, and that's going to be a monumental story.
I will say, I will give you gloom and doom, and then I'll give you a positive one, okay? Gloom and doom is going to be the Iran testing ballistic missiles. Unfortunately, in 500 years, you'll look back and you'll say that could have been the start of something that, you know, I get a little bit more big picture kernels. What are the kernels what seeds were sowed this week? The Iran testing of the missile and the overall global pushback or testing of Donald Trump is something that I think we can, you know, sort of go back to this week as it sort of began. The other one would be the Bays twins. Because they're going to be our entertainers in 20 years, 15 years.
Wow.
They're going to be on stage, and the twins will be like, the Knowles twins. And they'll be out there, and we'll be like, yeah.
Like, maybe they'll be president.
Yeah, they'll be president. There you go. And the third is one that's a little bit of a projection, but the Super Bowl this Sunday, Tom Brady wins, and the New England Patriots from here on out will be known as Tom Brady will be known as the biggest football player in the history of the game.
Wow.
If he has a good showing on Sunday and he wins, what, his fourth, fifth, whatever the number is. I think it's the seventh time the Patriots have been there. He has an MVP-like showing on Sunday. I think he will be known as the best football player to have ever played the game.
And Roger Goodell will be extremely angry.
That's right. Gerard McLendon, he is the host of Counterpoint on Lakeshore PBS and also a professor at Chicago State University. Jen Sabella, deputy editor at DNAinfo.com. Also, you can check her out as the co-host of Girl Talk, which is at the Hideout every fourth Tuesday. That is February 28th.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, you guys. Thanks for coming in.
Appreciate it.